Okay.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, how are you? Good to see you. Welcome.
Who else is there?
So we have a guest. I'll allow you to introduce yourself.
Ivan Koval.
You know Ivan?
Ivan Koval.
No, I don't.
Well, now you do.
Exactly.
Behind the mask, yes.
Behind the mask.
I have a bit of a
He's
cold.
In shul. He sits on the second last row here, right in the middle aisle.
Oh, I see. Okay.
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 That's his Mokom Kavua.
Okay. So,
Brian.
Go ahead.
Are Brian and Stephen there?
Not yet.
Yeah. Not at this moment. Brian has arrived, but is getting coffee. And Stephen, I don't see yet.
Okay.
We'll go over the Mishnah from yesterday that we started with the new perek, the new chapter, on Daf 18a, Yudchet Amud Aleph. So this, as we mentioned, was a critical Mishnah for Masechet Me'ilah because it describes what the action of Me'ilah actually is. So let's go through that. Says the Mishnah. Hanehene min ha-hektesh. If one benefited, nehene hana'a is a method of getting some sort of value for yourself. So nehene, one who benefits, mina hektesh, from something which was sanctified, of which we've discussed in the first number of chapters, what exactly is liable for me'ilah in terms of objects, in terms of korbanos, etc. Shave pruta, the amount that is worth one pruta, which as we said is a small coin, again a few cents, afalpi, even though, shelo pagam, even though you didn't actually damage the object in any way, you didn't make the object worth any less, you didn't depreciate in value. Ma'al, nevertheless, you have violated the laws of Me'ilah, and again, you'd be liable for all of the things that come with that, the korban, etc. Divir Rabbi Akiva, these are the words of Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so anytime you have Hana according to Rabbi Akiva, that's the end of the story, you violated Me'ilah. Bachachamim Amrim, and the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Akiva, and they say no. Kol Davar, anything. Sheyeshbo pigam, which has some form of depreciation when you use it, lo ma'al ad sheyifgom. You have not violated me'ilah until you actually go ahead and cause a certain loss in the object. Meaning, where the object itself normally depreciates for use, and we'll go into the specifics of what the chachamim require in this case, okay, in the Gemara, but objects that normally depreciate with use, if, let's say, you benefited from it, but the object did not depreciate whatsoever, you have not violated Mila according to the Chachamim. Vishein bo pigam, however, a object which does not normally depreciate with use, or does not depreciate with use, kevan shenehene, since you had hana ma'al, you did, in fact, violate Mila, because there, you obviously don't need to depreciate it in order to violate Mila, because there is no depreciation, again, when you regularly use the object. Ketzad, says the Mishnah. How is this? Meaning, what's an example that can illustrate this point? Nasna katla bitzavara. If he placed a necklace on her neck, tabas biyada, or a ring on her finger, or shasa bikos shel zahav, if he drank or she drank, using a golden cup. In all of these cases, the Chachamim would say, kevan shenehene, since you benefited ma'al. Why all of these metal objects don't normally depreciate with use. If someone puts on your necklace or your ring or drinks from your cup, the cup is not worth any less afterwards. None of these objects normally lose value when they are used on a one-time basis relative to the other times. I'm not talking about the market value of something when we have all these rules. The first time you touch it, it loses half its value. We're not talking about that. First of all, I don't think that's usually true of jewelry, right? It's not true usually of jewelry.
Cars.
Correct. With cars, it's nuts. Like 50%, you drive it off the lot, 50% less.
It's more depreciation.
Yeah. Right. Well, now there's just no cars available.
Yeah.
But anyways, okay, again, so something like jewelry, again, there's generally speaking no depreciation, so therefore, as soon as you benefited from it, shub of prutza's worth, that is enough for me.
What sort of jewelry would there be hektish about a ring? Or a necklace. Is that the person sanctified it?
Yeah. The person sanctified it.
I'm going to take it to the temple later.
Of course.
On. Okay. Just want to make sure.
Yeah, or it was already in the temple and you went and you said, hey, I like this
somebody
beautiful.
Somebody else made it hektish.
Yeah, somebody else made a hektish and you're using it. But yes, the point is this was hektish, this was sanctified, and you used that object. We noted yesterday, Rashi told us, how is it that you estimate the value of a shava pruta? How is it that you figure out how much someone benefited from it. Well, like how exactly do you measure benefit? I'm not sure there's anything tangible about that. So Rashi explains that we estimate based on the value of how much an average person would want to pay to perform the same action with this object. Okay, so for example, in the case of the necklace, you figure out how much would a woman pay to wear this necklace for X amount of time and X amount of circumstance. Okay, that's how Rashi says we estimate the value. So again, Shavuot is not so hard actually to hit. Again, it's a very, 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 very low threshold. Okay, however, in the other case, okay, in all these cases, Kevan Chanana, since you benefited Ma'al, you violated Me'ila. However, Lavash Bechaluk, if you wore a shirt, Kisa Betalid, you covered yourself with a talis, Bika Bakardom, and we said you dug into the ground with a spade. In all of these cases, Lo Ma'al, you did not violate Me'ila Ad Sheyifgom until there was some depreciation in the object. Why in all of these cases? These are things that generally depreciate with use. In the case of the shovel, it's something that, even though it's also made out of metal, it's something that every time you put it into the ground, you're weakening it, you're damaging it a little bit. Whereas with the clothing,
usually has a value of Shavuot Pruta.
Correct. But there it's again about the value of the object, not about what you benefited.
Right.
Okay? Yeah. And same thing with clothing. Clothing wear out. Clothing wear out. And the Gemara will discuss this in a little bit more detail. But ultimately, in all those cases, Chamim disagree with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva would say, so long as you've benefited from the shovel, doesn't matter how much it's depreciated. Chachamim say, no, it's got to depreciate. Hanen emin achatas. If one benefits from achatas, kishihi chaya, when it is alive, lo ma'al ad sheyifkom. There's a separate rule that, again, in this case, you did not violate me'ila until you caused a loss in the animal. Kishihi mesa, however, if the animal had already died, and there's going to be discussions of this as well, if the animal had already passed away, kevan chenehene ma'al, there it's all about hana, it's no longer about the damage, because, again, it's not, you know, it's just a carcass right now. So it's about the hana, and it is not about the value of the chatas. Again, we'll discuss this more. Was it talking about case of a mum, not mum? Okay. Let's continue. Says the Gemara, a very, very perplexing statement. Tana. We learned, it was taught. Mode Rabbi Akiva la Chachamim. Rabbi Akiva agrees to the Chachamim. Bidavar sheyesh bo pegam. When it regards an object which has depreciation for use. Again, Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah said, it doesn't matter what type of object it is, you always go by hana'a, the amount of benefit that you derived. Chachamim said, no, it depends on the object. If the object is one which depreciates, then you need to have a pruta of depreciation. If it's an object which is not of depreciation, then it's a shava pruta of hana. And the Gemara says, but don't worry, Rabbi Akiva agrees in a matter, in a case, where there is a pigam. He agrees to the Chachamim. What's the problem?
That's contrary to what he said before. He said this.
So there are two ways of looking at it. You can either say that it's disagreeing with the Mishnah, okay? Meaning, effectively, what this Braita is doing is it's turning Rabbi Akiva into the Chachamim. Right? The Chachamim said there's a difference depending on what type of object it is. Rabbi Akiva says there's no difference. Now we're saying, no, really, Rabbi Akiva agrees that there is a difference. So ask the Gemara the obvious question. It's just a matter of the way, the perspective. The Gemara looks at it, b'maikam iflagi. Then what are they arguing about? Right? If Rabbi Akiva agrees to the Chachamim, well, their whole argument was whether or not we differentiate between objects. So if we're saying he agrees to them that we differentiate between objects, so what's their machlokas? They're just saying the same thing according to this opinion. Says the Gemara, Amar Rava, Rava says, Bilavush mitzia umilmala. Rava says they're arguing about a middle garment and a milmala. What exactly is going on here, and what is this argument? So, if we look in Rashi, let's read, again, the commentary that's here as Rashi. About 20 lines up from the bottom. Amar Rava b'levush mitzia. Everyone see this Rashi? It's on the bottom right side. Again, we're on Yud Ches Amar Aleph. About less than 20 lines up. About 13, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 11, 12, 13 lines up, exactly. 13 lines up. Ready, everyone see it?
Yeah.
Amar Rava b'levush mitzia, says Rashi, what does this statement mean? De lo lavish le mi bachutz legamrei, we're not talking about something which you wear completely on the outside. For example, something like we're wearing right now, shirts, sweaters, or jackets. Those things, right? Dimalbush hachitzon pagam la'alter. Those are the ones that get worn out very much because they're exposed to the elements. Okay? Those wear out easily. Velo legamre mi bifnim, and it's not the most inner garment, samuch livsaro, that's close to, no, not necessarily, meaning it must not be. Okay? Velo legamre mi bifnim, it's not completely inside, samuch livsaro, next to one's skin. That's what bisaro means here. Tehunami pagam la'alter, because that also gets very used. Okay? Undergarments tend to, again, there's a lot of friction between them, right? Shemischachich levasar, or bibasar, because they rub against the skin, and therefore the innermost garments also tend to get nifgam, also tend to get damaged or depreciate very quickly. Ela bilavush shalovesh bintayim. We're talking about a garment which is worn in between, bein malbush ha'elyon uvein ha'tachton. So basically, a lot of people, for example, wear an undershirt, then tzitzit, right, then a shirt. So the shirt, again, if it's exposed to the elements, may depreciate. Okay, if you look at some of my sleeves when I'm putting on my tefillin, starts to rip a little bit quickly. Things on the outer garment tend to depreciate quickly. The inner garment also, it's exposed to your skin, it's all sweaty. But the middle garment is the one that's most preserved. So says Rava, this is where there's a machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. And what is that machlokes? Right? And Rashi says, and if you look, okay, in the next Rashi, jump down a little bit. Okay. Do you see six lines up from the bottom, the last word in Rashi? Okay. Uveha. Everyone see the word uveha? Mm-hmm. Again, six lines up from the bottom, the last word on the line. Uveha. Uveha, and in this, Pligi, Rabbi Pligi. This is what they're arguing about. Rabbi Akiva Safar, Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion. Ho'il, since, v'havu devarim she'enan nifgamin la'alter, that these objects, both the levush metziah and the milmala, which was a very light, thin, linen garment, okay? These things, ho'il, since, v'havu devarim, these are objects, she'enan nifgamin la'alter, that do not immediately depreciate. Afal gav, even though the pigimi le'acharzman, that they do depreciate after time, meaning, again, it takes a long time for them to depreciate, kevan delo pigimi la'alter, since they do not depreciate immediately, have kidavar, it's like an object, she'en bo pigam, that does not depreciate, and therefore, demoalin bo, kevan she'nehe nemimenu keshava pruta, that mi'ila exists as soon as you are nehe by a sheva pruta. So for a middle garment, Rabbi Akiva says, it's true that it does depreciate, but since that takes so long, since it depreciates so little, in that case, we view it as an object which doesn't depreciate, and therefore me'ila happens as soon as you benefit from it, Ashava Pruta. However, right, Afal Gav de Lo Pagam. V'Rabbanan Safri, however, the rabbis say no. Ho'il v'yesh bo pagam, since there exists a situation, this object is an object that can depreciate, Mikol makom lo ma'ala chiyifkom. Nevertheless, you did not violate mi'ila until you actually caused the depreciation in the object, meaning the Rabbanan are much more lenient. For them, you might be able to wear it for a week, and you enjoyed it very much. You were able to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis, let's say. You got a lot of benefit from it, but ultimately,
it's going to be it's not
because it ultimately at some point it'll get depreciated. But according to Chachamim, you only violate it once it gets depreciated.
Right, it has to be.
Questions?
It's a good theory.
Yeah, it's a good theory. I should say the example I gave of tzitzis, in case someone wants to nitpick. There's a whole discussion of mitzvos lav lehanos nitnu. So maybe not tzitzis, a garment that's a middle garment. I wasn't saying it specifically about tzitzis. Yeah. Okay.
So vaguely, in terms of the outer garment and the inner garment, they agree.
Both of them say that you need to wait for one depreciation of a shava pruta.
That's not a lot.
Again, 2 cents. Too. 3 cents. Right? Whereas for the middle garment, you have the leniency. You have the leniency of the rabbis to wait also until that depreciates by a Sheva Pruta, which may take longer than simply benefiting from it for Sheva Pruta, which is what Rabbi Akiva holds. Right? That's what I would imagine, that the benefit comes first. That's what I would imagine.
So it's only the time, Rabbi Akiva says, in the short time, you can derive benefit in the opportunity even though it's been damaged.
Correct. Okay. Correct. And you have to bring the korban and everything, meaning you violated milah. Okay. Now the Gemara goes into one of the most extreme sets of drashos that I can remember seeing. Again, not that I'm such a baki in Gemara, but the Gemara is going to darshan all of the words in the pasuk which tell us that you cannot do me'ilah. Okay, there's a pasuk in the Torah which tells us don't do me'ilah. The Gemara is going to darshan that and come up with tons and tons and tons of specific laws about me'ilah based on that pasuk. It's a little bit strange because usually we like to limit it to one or two derivations, and here the Gemara is just like tossing everything in, presumably because it comes from one source, but let's go through that pasuk. Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis taught in a Braita.
Yeah. I have a question before we embark on this.
Sure.
And you may have answered it while I was out.
Mm-hmm.
Is the distinction of these two objects only that they, the ones that is practical, the ones that provide material, the ones that lose value, and ones that don't lose value, and the latter are the ones that we've been talking about with Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim?
So,
or is there some biblical or rabbinical definition of what deteriorates and what loses value and what doesn't deteriorate?
Oh, presumably this is based on market value. Based on Rashi, we talked about the Rashi, I don't know if you were here, for the how we estimate a Shavapruta?
No, I didn't hear that.
Okay.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Remember that from Kedushin.
Yeah. So it was, you know, sort of how much people would be willing to pay for it. So presumably we're talking about, again, just whatever the market value is. That's how we calculate hana. How we calculate depreciation is how much you could sell it for. That's what I think you're referencing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. The rabbis taught in a braita. Nefesh. When it says nefesh kitimol ma'al, a soul which will do me'ilah, what does nefesh mean? Echad hayachid, whether it's an individual. Ve'echad hanasi, and whether it's the prince. Ve'echad hamashiach, or whether it's an anointed kohen. All of these people, they're all included in the word nefesh. Nefesh means anyone, right? Why do you think the Gemara, just a quick trivia question, why do you think the Gemara spells out specifically Echad HaYachid ve'Echad HaNasi ve'Echad HaMashiach? Why do you think it gives these three examples? Why doesn't it say a man or a woman? Why do you think it says specifically an individual, a Nasi, and a Mashiach?
That's interesting.
Anybody know why it says those three?
Because the Kohen is obliged to do the korbanot, right? He's obliged.
What do you mean by that?
He has to make the individual korbanot, right?
What do you mean he has to make them?
So he's the one who controls whether.
Oh, but what about a nasi? So that's fair about it.
In certain cases, he has to, according to the Torah.
Right. So I think if you look at context here, it's important. Let's get out some chumashim, because I think this will anyways be valuable to us.
Yeah.
We don't want to grab it.
There's the carbon of every day that they did, right, in the beginning of...
Up to Vayikra, chapter 5.
Yeah.
You guys have chumashim over there? Can you access? Yeah. Tanakh also works. It's okay. Still has the same stuff.
It's in Parsha Shmini, right? Parsha
Shmini. No, earlier.
Early in Shmini?
Oh.
Tzav, right. Vayikra, right. Okay, got it.
So take a look in Vayikra chapter. Hey, you'll see what else is there. I think this will help shed light.
Yeah, it's all about the Quran, right?
Okay, so Parshat Vayikra, the end of Parshat Vayikra.
It's a Shishi.
Yep, this is in Shishi. Okay. I want you to jump actually back to page 556 to chapter 4. Page 556, everyone see it? Mm-hmm. Everyone see on page 556? That should be chapter 4. What's the very first pasuk that appears on that page? Im ha-kohen ha-mashiach yachetal le-ashmat ha-am. It talks about the korban brought if the kohen ha-mashiach sins. Turn the page. Okay? Pasuk 22, asher nasi yachetah. It talks about what happens if the Nasi sins.
Right.
Turn the page again.
Nefesh.
Page 560. Vim nefesh achat techetah vishkaga. If any, what does nefesh achat mean there?
Anybody.
Any individual Jewish person.
Right.
So now, when we follow that up, okay, with the laws of Me'ilah, okay, in the next chapter, we might have thought, so this is on page 564, okay, everyone see page 564? 564, it's Pasuk Tes Vav there that we're looking at in our Gemara. What might we think the word nefesh means? Before we had Kohen HaMashiach and Nasi and nefesh. So what does nefesh mean? Nefesh means yes. Everyone that's not a Kohen HaMashiach or a Nasi. Again, mm-hmm. We have three situations where one brings the korban for certain sins. The Kohen HaMashiach, the Kohen Gadol, brings one. The Nasi brings a different one. And nefesh brings a different one. So we would have thought naturally, from that context, that nefesh excludes Kohen Gadol and Nasi. Why? Because they were given specifically different korbanot. In the very next chapter, when we're using the word nefesh again, so again, back on page 564, which is our pasuk, nefesh kitim ol ma'al, v'chata'a v'ishkaga mikatshei Hashem, this is talking about Me'ila, okay? What does nefesh mean here? So I might have thought, let's look back a chapter. What does nefesh mean? Nefesh excludes the Nasi. Nefesh excludes the Kohen Gadol. Answer is no. Nefesh includes everyone. Nefesh means everyone. Before, we had to say that, fine. But now, nefesh is all-inclusive. That's the first part. Leave the Chumash open, just in case we need to make reference to it for other psukim. By the way, you're welcome to read the psukim. I don't know if we've ever read the psukim of Me'ila during the Masechet before this.
Sorry, all of Reishi is removed from this Tanakh.
No, that's the Tanakh.
Yeah, censored.
There's no Reishi.
Wow.
It's been ripped out.
Wow.
Really?
That's terrible.
Okay, so we should put it amongst the books that are no good.
Yeah.
We can do it later.
Listen, I've heard of censorship of stories in Tanakh, but never like that.
Never happened. No, some people do things, strange things.
Yes, people do very strange things. I hope that was not intentional, though. That would be a new low. Anyways, but again, you're welcome to look at the psukim here. It talks about all this. But anyways, First the word nefesh. So nefesh, echad ayachid, ve'echad anasi, ve'echad mashiach. Now we understand why it says that. Nefesh means everybody. Kitim ol ma'al. When it will be ma'al a ma'al. Okay, we are verbizing the word me'ila and ma'al. Okay, so what does the word ma'al actually mean? Ein ma'al ela shinui. Says the Gemara, the word ma'al means to change something. Okay, it means to change something. That's what the Gemara says the word ma'al, the root ma'al means.
From kosher to, from kodesh to non-kodechulin.
Correct. So it's like a changing out of something, almost. Okay, so v'chein hu omer, okay. And so it says, where else do we see the word me'ila in, and we can use the same definition? By the sota, very good. V'chein hu omer, so it says, ish, any man ki tiste ishto, when his wife will become a sota, uma'ala vo ma'al, and she will change from him. Meaning, the Gemara is saying that the word ma'al means to change. In the case of a sota, an adulterous woman, we're assuming that she was swapping out, so to say, her husband for someone else. Okay, that's the case of what's going on there. So therefore, that's the word ma'al means. Very fascinating. V'omer, and it also says, Vayim alu belohe avosehem, vayisnu acharei abelim. When talking about the Jewish people, it says, they swapped out their God, the God of their fathers, and they instead turned away after the Baalim, which were different avodazaras of the time. Okay, so we see that the word ma'al means to swap something for something else. In this case, as you said, it would mean swapping an object which is holy and swapping it into chulin, swapping it into something which is not holy, using it for a non-holy purpose. I'll just note, by the way, for Me'ila, a very fascinating thing that lots of halachists like to talk about. There is this crazy, I think I mentioned this to you, not during a shir, but there's a famous, famous case in halachic literature. Maybe I did mention it during shir. Famous, famous case of halachic literature where a man basically came to a village so there was a woman whose husband was out on a business trip, whatever the case was, and a man comes to the village and says, I need a place to stay. So the woman gives him a room, and he essentially convinces her that he is Eliyahu Anavi, and God appeared to him, and he's a Navi, and God appeared to him and said that he needs to have children with this woman in order for Mashiach to come. The child born will be Mashiach, and convinces her of this.
Great
con job, exactly. And then, they're intimate, and then poof, he disappears the next day. The husband comes back, and the wife says, "You're not going to believe it. I'm the mother of Mashiach." He says, "What? This is a scammer. What are you crazy?" So they go to the rabbis to know, because the halacha is, if someone is intimate intentionally with someone else in a relationship, they're not allowed to go back. They're a sota. They're not allowed to go back to their husband. So what's the halacha? So the discussion in the case was, it says, uma'ala vo ma'al, that she had to have rebelled against him. She had to have violated him.
The husband.
She was the husband. Yeah. Specifically, it's against the husband. It's not against God. It's not a ben adam la makom. It's a ben adam la chavero. So now, if you would have asked her, would your husband approve of this? She'd say, of course. That's why she went running out to tell him. Right? They chose your wife to be the mother of Mashiach. So therefore, the poskim said, in this case, it's not a true case of sota, and therefore they can remain married, and they can continue to live together from this umala voma'al. But anyways.
Is that the story that the Mashiach was born, or we don't know?
Yeah.
We don't know.
As far as we know, we can be pretty certain.
The Mashiach wasn't born.
Yes. Anyways, says the Gemara. Okay, so now that we know what the word ma'al means, uma'alam nefesh ki tim'ol ma'al. Okay, yachol, one might think, and now we give a whole list of cases. Pagam v'lo nehene. Let's say you just damaged, but you didn't benefit at all. Oh. Or, nehene v'lo pagam. You benefited, but you didn't damage the object in any which way. Uv'mechubar lakarka. Or, you got hana from something that was attached to the ground. Or, uv'shliach, like a tree. Uv'shliach she'asa shlichuto. Or, if it's talking about, you would think that a shliach who was instructed by someone else to do, basically, mi'ilah, on someone else's behalf, one might have thought, okay, that in all of these cases, right, you'd still violated mi'ilah, okay, even if you just did one and not the other, or you did it to b'mechubar lakarka, or you did it as a shliach for someone else where presumably they got the benefit. In all of these cases, Tamud Lamar comes the pasuk to tell us, v'chate'a. Because what's the word after kitimol ma'al in your chumashim? V'chate'a. And you sinned. And says the Gemara, ne'emar chet bitruma, in regards to the laws of truma. Okay, truma is, again, when you take off a certain portion of your produce to be given to the Kohanim. It's an absolute requirement. And there we also talk a lot about whether or not someone can be a representative for you, etc. Ne'emar chet bitruma, it says the word, the language, the root, chet and truma. V'ne'emar chet b'milah, it also says the same root in me'ilah. Ma chet ha'amur bitruma, just as the word sin, which is used in truma. Pogem v'nehene, you need to both cause a depreciation and benefit. And number two, umi shepagam nehene, the person who did it benefited, because we're talking about someone who, for example, eats truma and they're not allowed to. Okay, that's what we're talking about over here. Okay, if you look over here, right? By the way, the pasuk is velo tisu alav chet bari mechemet chalbo mimenu. Okay, meaning when you give truma, you will not sin. Meaning implies if you eat the things that should have been truma, you do sin. Why do you sin? Because you benefited from the food and you caused damage to the kohen because you ate his truma. Okay. So again, ma chet ha'amur b'truma, just as the sin, the chet, which is said about truma. Pogem v'nehene is where you both damaged, because you ate it, it's no longer available to the kohen. V'nehene, and you benefited from eating it. Number two, umishe pagam, the person who damaged it, nehene, he was the same person who benefited, meaning it wasn't done with a shlichus by someone else benefited. Uvidavar she pogem bo nehene, and in the object that he damaged, that was specifically what he benefited from. And the damage and the benefit come at the same time. And when it comes to eating things which should have been truma, it must be detached from the ground. Okay. And it's only truma, okay, if someone attempts to take off truma, it's only truma with the intent of the owner of the field. I cannot walk into another person's field and say, hey, I'm taking off truma. There are all sorts of discussions about what the parameters are and when we assume it's okay and everything else. But ultimately, if the guy says, don't take off truma, and I take off truma, that doesn't work. Right? Says Rashi, right? Yichi taram midato shel balabayit hu davya truma. So therefore, since we have all of these laws about eating something which should have been truma, and we're comparing the two cases, says the Gemara, af chet ha'amur b'me'ilah, so to the chet that is said here by me'ilah, pogem v'nehene, It has to be both damage and benefit. Umi shepagam nehenah, and the person who damages has to benefit. Uvedavar shepogim bo nehenah, and you have to benefit from that object that you damaged. Ufgimato vahanato keechad, and they have to come together. Uvitalush min hakarka, and it has to be detached from the ground. Uvishliach sheasa shlichuto, and it has to be only in the case of someone who did their shlichut, someone who was sent to do something, they followed the instructions. All of these are requirements for Me'ilah as well.
All right, so we're talking about a shaliach there. So it would be the Baal, the principal, not the agent, who gets the punishment.
So let's go through what you're referring to. Yeah. There is a general rule in halacha that ein shaliach lidvar avera.
Right.
Okay, you may not send someone else to do an avera for you. Meaning, what does it mean? Obviously, you can't send someone else to do an avera for you. What it means is, if I send someone else, I, the shaliach, do not have a claim to say, well, he sent me to do it. He told me to do it. Why? Because the Gemara explains, divrei harav v'divrei hatalmid divrei mishomin. God gave you one instruction, a person gave you another instruction. There's no blaming the person who sent you. That's what it means. Ein shaliach l'dvar avera. You can't say, oh, the guy sent me to do an avera. It's not my fault. He told me to eat pig. Right? Or he told me to do a different avera, even if it may benefit the original owner. Why? Because the Torah told you, don't do the avera. So you are held responsible as the person who actually did the action of the avera, even though someone else told you to do it. Okay?
What about the person instructing him to do the
That's
avera?
What we're talking about.
No, and we're saying that person, although it's not a nice thing to do, we are saying that person is not held responsible because the person who he instructed should not have listened to him. Should not have done the avera, right? If I told you go and kill someone, you should say no. We're not allowed to kill. You shouldn't say, oh well, he told me, right?
I say turn on the lights for Shabbat.
Yeah.
It's not my avera.
Correct, but you're telling me to do that, and the Torah expects that I will say no. God told me I'm not allowed to turn on the lights. Now hana'a is a separate point. There are certain actions, and all across halacha. All across halacha, there are rules where if an avera was done on behalf of someone else, that person may not sometimes may not benefit. Okay, so Maisa Shabbos and Bittul and all sorts of other things. Okay, if someone did an avera, the benefit that other people may have is always a question. Same thing, by the way, even if a non-Jew does malacha for someone on Shabbos, right? If a non-Jew, if I specifically go to a non-Jew and I say, hey, can you turn on the lights for me? Right? Okay, again, there's discussion. When can I start to benefit from what the non-Jew did? So these are all big, big questions. Ultimately, here, though, we're talking about, okay, in this page that we're on, Yud Ches Amud Beis, we're talking about Shliach She'asa Shlichuto. It has to be, again, there has to be some Dad Balabayit, and we're specifically talking about there has to be Hana'a and Pegima by the same person. Okay, we're going to go into it a little bit more in the future.
I have a little minor problem here, because when it talks about previously, at the beginning, after the Yochol, it says Vashaliyah Shasa Shlichuso. Here it says, and they contradict when it says Shliach at the end. Here it says Shem Shalchuhu Limo Hekdesh Vasa Shlichuto Itchayev Hashaliyah B'Mila.
Yes,
right. Kemo Hashaliyah Shaliyah Shaliyah Lavor Al Shor
Al Shearim. Yeah.
Shabbatov Shalchuhu Shemitchayev Be'Onish Lo Hamashliach.
Yes.
Sharei ein shaliach lidvar avera.
Yes.
That's what he says here at the end here.
Right.
Shaliach she'asa shlichuto. Right. He says, hamishaleach hu amitchayev.
Correct. Because this is what it's specifically teaching. If you look in Rashi here, right? Shaliach she'asa shlichuto. This was a general rule. Okay, aval. Shel balabais de balabais ma'al prat l'shliach shelo asa shlichuto. Okay, we'll pick up with this tomorrow. Because people are already rushing out here. I don't want to disturb davening. But not tomorrow, but next week, I suppose.
Okay.
Because today's Thursday already. Okay, have a wonderful day.